Welcome to the M2I Alternative Investments Chat, where we demystify the world of alternative investments and financing for entrepreneurs and investors alike. With these discussions, we hope you're more empowered to unlock new opportunities in your business or portfolio. And today we're going to be talking about REITs. What's a REIT? How can you invest in a REIT? So first off, the definition of a REIT or a real estate investment trust is a company that owns and in most cases operates income producing real estate. Okay. This is actually a form of investment that's modeled after mutual funds. REITs pool capital together from investors who earn dividends on their investment. And they own many types of real estate, including office and apartment buildings, studios, and warehouses. So commercial real estate primarily. And some REITs engage in actually financing real estate. And REITs provide a way to investors to earn a share of income produced through commercial real estate without actually owning the apartment building or having to manage it. So you get like a piece of the pie as opposed to having to buy an entire complex. So it's a way for people to get involved. So here are some types of REITs. There are several different types. We're going to cover five today.
Okay.
The first one is an equity REIT, and that is the most common form of a REIT. And you invest in hard real estate assets. And you own and operate income-producing properties. Again, not owning totally, but owning a piece of the pie if you're an investor.
Okay.
They generate revenue primarily through leasing a space or collecting tenants and rents on that space. So think an apartment complex. If you're a renter, that money is going into this pool where people are making a profit, hopefully. Equity REITs can specialize in several different types of commercial real estate, including those apartments and single family homes that can be residential, but also commercial office buildings, retail centers, industrial, warehouse, distribution centers, and even healthcare like hospitals, medical offices, and hospitality, hotels and resorts. That's another form.
Never would have thought that.
Cool. Yeah. And then there's also mortgage REITs, which can also be denoted as M REITs. Mortgage REITs invest in real estate mortgages rather than owning the physical properties. And that makes up of less than 10% of the REIT market, so it is a smaller share.
Okay.
They generate income by producing or originating mortgages and mortgage-backed securities and earning interest on that investment. Mortgage REITs mainly focus on residential mortgages, commercial mortgages, or a combination of both. Could be any one of those.
Oh, cool.
And then hybrid REITs, which you guessed it, is a combination of the two that we just discussed. So they may own and operate real estate properties while also investing in the real estate loans or mortgage-backed securities. So both and. And hybrid REITs seek to diversify their income streams by generating revenue from both rental income and interest income. So it's a great way to potentially diversify your investment.
That's awesome. And like you said, there are those five main ones. So you mentioned the three. I'm going to cover the other two that are mostly known. Those are publicly traded REITs. So these REITs are listed on the stock market. So you can actually go on and buy them just like you would if you were buying a stock in like Target or Starbucks. Mm-hmm. You can tell where I go every day. anything like that. So that's really cool. And they offer liquidity and are accessible to individual investors through a brokerage account. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really cool. That's something that you don't see sometimes with alts these days. And then you also have those private REITs, which private REITs are not traded on the public exchange. Mm-hmm. So they're typically offered through private placement, just like a lot of the other alternative investments that we've talked about on previous podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
They're often available to accredited investors, those mm-hmm. people with those high net worths.
Mm-hmm.
Private REITs may offer less liquidity compared to public traded REITs, but can provide access to specialized real estate options or opportunities. So it's really great for all around. So like your common person or not so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the history of a REIT came in. So the creation of the real estate investment trust legislation actually started in September of 1960.
Mm.
So President Dwight D. Eisenhower, he signed this into legislation that created a new approach of an income producing real estate investment, a manner in which best attributes of real estate and stocks, like mm-hmm. we said, you can do on the market or get the other kind where private mm-hmm. Based on the investment. So these are really cool because he finally signed this in and says, hey, this is a great investment. I'm going to do it just like all these other public mm-hmm. ones do.
Sure.
And it was for the first time he brought the benefits of the commercial real estate investment to regular Americans. Sure. Because again, the benefits that previously had been available only for large financial institutes or those very, very wealthy individuals, as we see oftentimes. Right. And then the groundwork for the modern REIT era followed with a tax reform of 1986. Now, when REITs were given the ability to operate and manage real estate rather than just owning and financing it, that's mm-hmm. what happened in 1986. The REIT approach to real estate investment has been refined and enhanced continuously. Mm-hmm. And actually, since the U.S. put all this into motion, it has served as a model for around 40 different countries.
Oh, wow.
When doing research for this podcast, I saw that there's, you know, Argentinian, there's Colombia, there's all kinds of really cool, like REITs are not just in America. Mm-hmm. They are everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. People have to have somewhere to live.
Well, of course.
You need to, you know, businesses have mm-hmm. to be built.
It's a great investment structure.
Yeah. Not just here in the United States, but yeah. It was for 40 different countries. I think that's really, really cool.
That is cool. And then we can move on to the expansion of REITs that, you know, as we just mentioned, REITs continue to shape and change over the years. So in the 1980s and the 1990s, the REIT industry expanded to include various types of residential REITs, apartments, single family homes, healthcare REITs, those hospitals and medical office, industrial REITs, and more specialized sectors. So it kind of moved into really a lot of these sectors are kind of what when I think of a REIT, that's what I think about are these properties. So it's interesting to learn that that's kind of a newer development. And the growth of publicly traded REITs on major stock exchanges provided investors with liquidity, like you mentioned, and facilitated capital formation for real estate investors or investments. So these investors were able to pool their money together and help these projects come to life. Because obviously building a hospital, building a apartment is really, really expensive. And it would be nearly impossible for just one person to buy and fund that entire project.
Yeah. And I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but we actually film here on the surface of the sun, aka Phoenix. but if you drive around the city, everywhere you look, mm-hmm. something is being built.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a new apartment complex going up just a few blocks away from the studio. Mm-hmm. There, you know, over by me, there's condos that are just about to be done.
Yep.
You go down to downtown Phoenix. There are so many places I'm like, where did that come from? When did that get there?
Yeah.
You drive by Tempe, I didn't even know half of that existed.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it's really cool because when you think about that, you kind of think, who built that?
Right. Yeah.
Who gets the money from that?
Mostly REITs.
And I think that's so awesome. Yeah. And it's just cool. I love now watching how it just is grown and we can have a part of that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There was actually the REIT Modernization Act, which came about in 1999, that made several significant changes to the regulatory framework of REITs that we now know today. It expanded the types of assets that REITs could own, allowing them to invest both in real estate and real estate related assets, such as mortgages and securities, those MREITs that we mentioned earlier. And the act also simplified the qualification requirements for REITs and clarified rules related to income sources and asset diversification. So that's probably the most recent, legislation that has come into play with in regards to REITs. But obviously, it has significantly impacted how people invest in REITs today. Yeah. And then, of course, it wouldn't be our podcast without getting into some regulations.
Government's got its rules. Yeah, you got to follow.
Exactly. So to qualify as a REIT under U.S. tax law, a company must meet several criteria. So bear with us. We're going to kind of dive deeper into this. It must invest at least 75% of its total assets in real estate, cash, or U.S. treasuries. Okay. It must derive at least 75% of its gross income from real estate related sources, such as rents on real property, interest on mortgages financing real property, or gains from the sale of real estate assets. And it must distribute at least 90% of its taxable income to shareholders annually in the form of dividends.
That's good for if you're an investor because it means you got a cash flow coming in.
Yeah, totally. And we'll touch continuously more on that because that's definitely a huge appeal. And it must be structured as a corporation, trust, or association that is taxable as a corporation. So there are some of those things. And then we'll kind of dive some more into the asset requirements here. REITs must primarily invest in income-producing real estate that we've just mentioned, right? A lot of the times they make their money on that rent.
Right.
So that those are those office buildings, shopping centers, and the healthcare facilities, all those things I mentioned earlier, they're making money from tenants.
Got it.
Governance and management. REITs must be managed by a board of directors or trustees responsible for overseeing REITs operations and compliance with regulatory requirements. There are rules regarding the independence of directors and trustees, as well as disclosure requirements, of which we'll touch on some more, related to executive compensation and related party transactions. So you can see there's quite a bit of rules here.
Yeah, and I'm sure there is taxation.
Yeah, do you want to touch on taxation?
Taxes.
Always taxes.
Yeah. So REITs themselves are generally not subject to corporate income tax if they meet the requirements for qualifications and distribute the majority of their income to shareholders. Again, that 90%, if that is sent out, then we'll talk about it later. But I believe that the investor actually pays the tax on that. Mm-hmm. So it's great for if you're actually holding the REIT. Shareholders are, here we go. That's what I just said.
You're just getting ahead of yourself.
Shareholders are taxed on dividends received from REITs, which are typically treated as ordinary income. So as it's called passive income, as you're getting those checks from your REITs, you're then taxed on those, mm-hmm. and they qualify for preferential tax rates applicable to qualified dividends. There are leveraged limits, limitations. So the limitations on the amount of debt REITs can incur. So again, these are a little bit different than some asset classes mm-hmm. that don't have these kind of strict rules. So for example, a REIT must not have more than 50% of its assets financed with debt unless certain expectations are exceptions apply. So you can't have, you know, you can't just like buy something and then like fix a bunch and then you're all the way in debt. Because mm-hmm. I know on previous ones, you know, you have to, what you give your investors is minus debts.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't put it all the way into debt. So you got to make sure you pay your investors.
Yeah.
And then REITs may use leverage to finance their real estate investments, but must manage debt levels prudently to maintain compliance and regulatory requirements, always mm-hmm. following all the rules that the SEC and the government has put it in place. And then lastly, we do have that reporting and disclosures. REITs are required to file regular reports mm-hmm. with the SEC, including annual financial statements, quarterly reports, and other disclosures that provide transparency to investors about the REIT's financial conditions,
yep.
operations, and management. Again, yep. making sure that all the information is available for investors so they right. can see it up front, just so there's no fraud or anything
right.
like that.
And that's typical.
Yeah. So why don't you dive into how an actual REIT works?
Right. Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I'm ready to miss.
So a REIT operates similarly to a mutual fund, which we mentioned earlier, but instead of investing in stocks and bonds, it invests in income-producing real estate. So first off, there's property acquisition. Duh, you have to have
that property. You gotta buy the good stuff.
So first, you acquire a real estate property or properties, and REITs may acquire properties directly from purchasing them outright or indirectly through joint ventures, partnerships, or investments in real estate-related assets like mortgages and securities.
Okay.
And then the primary goal of a REIT after you acquire it is to generate income. And this typically comes from rental payments, as mentioned earlier, received from tenants who lease the space on REIT-owned properties. And in the case of mortgage REITs, those MREITs, income is derived from the interest that's earned on the real estate loans or mortgage-backed securities that the REIT invests in.
That's probably why you see all the signs, like a new apartment complex is being built, like leasing now, because they want tenants in there.
Of course.
Before it even opens.
Yeah.
To get that cash flow going.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. At that point, you know, they've invested a lot of money into this property. The way that they're going to make that money back is by people paying them. Yeah. So empty rooms or empty apartments in a apartment complex is no good. We'll want to fill those up. Next, there's the distribution of income, and REITs are required by law to distribute at least 90% of their taxable income to shareholders in the form of dividends. We've said that, but I think that's one of the biggest takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes REITs super attractive to investors seeking that regular income, that passive income that keeps coming in. It's a huge benefit of investing in REITs. And then shareholders receive dividends based on their ownership in the REIT shares, similar to dividends from stocks. So if you own, you know, 30%, you can get 30%, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Liquidity and trading, which we've touched on, but most REITs are publicly traded on major stock exchanges, similar to stocks. This provides that liquidity to investors that's really attractive and allows them to buy and share their or buy and sell their shares of REITs easily through brokerage accounts. So if you're, you know, ready to move on and get rid of your share, you can do that fairly easily for most REITs. The trading of REIT shares is subject to market forces, of course, and the price of REIT shares can fluctuate based on factors such as interest rates, economic conditions, and the performance of the underlying real estate assets. Like we just mentioned, right? If you're not getting those tenants in, then you're not producing as much income likely. So,
or if we have a global pandemic again.
Of course.
And everyone works from home.
Yeah.
Those standalone buildings that were occupied by multiple companies, you better try to figure out something to do with that.
Right. And that's true of most investments.
Always a little bit of risk, no matter what you're doing.
Of course, right. And then there's another key feature here, which is the professional management. REITs are managed by experienced professionals who oversee the day-to-day operations of the properties. So your apartment manager, the staff that works there, they're managing that property, right? That includes the leasing, the maintenance, and the overall property management. And then the management team is responsible for maximizing the income and value of the properties owned by the REITs, as well as identifying new investment opportunities that align with the REIT's new strategy. So, you know, this is also part of the reason why we're seeing rent continue to climb. They're making more money. There's such a hot market for, especially in Phoenix right now. Lots of people are moving here. So the demand is high. That means they can charge a little bit more. That means they can generate more income.
They do also sometimes have those deals, if you will, where it's like get a month free.
Right.
You know, again, like you said, those empty rooms this doesn't do any good if they're empty. So you want to be make attractive deals for some of these new tenants to come in. If that means giving them quote unquote rent for free for a month,
right?
I think they can do that, especially if you're going to ask them to sign a 14-month, 15-month lease.
Right.
Lock them in for a little bit.
Yeah. And that can be super helpful in getting people in the door. Erica, I'm hoping that you can touch on some of the benefits of investing in REITs for those who are interested.
Yeah. So we've talked about several of them already, but just in case you are very interested in actually investing in a REIT here, just to recap all of them are the benefits. So REITs are required, like we've discussed multiple times, to distribute at least 90% of their taxable income to shareholders in the form of dividends. So this provides investors with a steady flow of income, typically higher than what's available from many other types of investments like stocks and bonds. Mm-hmm. Again, you're getting that regular check. Think about how much you pay for rent or on your mortgage, all of that, add all that up. That is all divvied up to the investors. There is, again, that diversification. So REITs invest in a diverse portfolio of real estate properties across different sectors. We've mentioned multiple times, residential, commercial, industrial, healthcare, and the list goes on and on. And investing in a REIT allows investors to diversify their portfolios geographically and across various types of real estate assets, reducing that overall risk. Because, again, sometimes just because houses aren't available, the housing market doesn't necessarily mean that those other businesses like hospitals have to be built.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, or warehouses. Nobody can buy a house. You got to move out. Where are you going to store all your stuff?
Sure.
Those have got to be
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon, the little pods.
Amazon warehouses.
There we go. Yeah. Someone had to build those though too. And I'm sure there's investors in that. Let's look that up after the show.
Yeah.
There's liquidity. Like we've talked about, most REITs are publicly traded on the major stock exchange, which provides investors with liquidity. So you can trade those. I know that I've since starting this podcast and learning about investments, I now have invested some of my funds, and I'm constantly, you know, every morning seeing where it opens, at night checking to see where it went, seeing if I made, lost, see where I need to sell. So you can be able to look at it like the public traded market. It's kind of fun to like have that app and be like, ooh, I made $300 today. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, I lost $100 yesterday. Okay, well, anyway, it's really fun. It shares, you know, you can do this through a brokerage account. Most people have apps these days. Yeah. Unlike direct ownership of physical real estate, which can be less liquid. Again, if you own your home, going to resell it takes time. Mm-hmm.
Depends
on what the market is, what the interest rates are. Yeah. There's so many other factors. Whereas if you just own just parts of it, kind of get rid of it whenever you want.
Sure.
So there's accessibility. So REITs allow individual investors to access the real estate market with smaller amounts of capital compared to purchasing properties outright. Again, think about the cost of a house. I think in America, the average house is selling for like, don't quote me, but it's something ridiculous, like $700,000 or something crazy. Well,
certainly way more than it used to be.
Exactly. And so a lot of people don't have that kind of money just to spend. But if you want to put a little bit in, you can. So it's great for the everyday American. They provide an opportunity for investors to participate in commercial real estate assets that might otherwise be out of reach of, due to those high capital requirements that we see a lot in other asset classes in the alternative investment world. And then there's a potential for capital appreciation. In addition to dividend income, REIT investors may benefit from capital appreciation if the value of the underlying real estate properties increase over time. Mm-hmm. Again, things change, property values change. If that goes up, it's a great deal for you.
Yeah.
And you did nothing. You just invested when you wanted to, and then all of a sudden you're making more.
Yep.
As properties within the REIT's portfolio appreciate in value, the market price of the REIT shares may increase, providing investors with those capital gains.
Yeah.
So we talk about this often, and we always will. Risks.
Risks.
Let's cover some of the risks of REITs, because again, we're over here telling everybody this is awesome. It's, you know, for the everyday, but there's always two sides to the story, right?
No, I feel like we should have like a big red button on the table whenever we talk about risks.
Risks. Yeah.
So number one, market risks. Duh. That's one of the biggest risks in terms of any investment that you participate in. The market value of REIT shares can fluctuate based on market conditions, economic factors, and even investor sentiment. External events such as economic downturns, geopolitical events, or changes in the real estate market conditions can impact the performance of REITs and lead to decline in share prices. If we're talking about the Great Recession of 2008 and the real estate market crash that happened, if we're talking about the pandemic.
Or hurricane.
Sure, hurricane, yeah.
Right now that just probably hit Texas.
Yeah, of course.
All my Houston peeps, I hope you're good out there.
Yeah.
I already went through Hurricane Harvey. Not fun.
Yeah.
And so, but think about it. If your building is wiped out for a hurricane.
It can't exactly make income.
Can't make money off of it anymore.
Exactly. And then there's also interest rate sensitivity. REITs can be sensitive to changes in interest rates, as all property is. If you are someone who is looking in investing in a home, even for just your primary residence, interest rates is always one of the first thing that comes up right now. Mm-hmm. And that obviously affects REITs as well. When interest rates rise, borrowing costs for REITs may actually increase, potentially reducing their profitability and ability to finance new acquisitions. And higher interest rates can also make other fixed income investments more attractive relative to REITs, potentially leading to the decrease in demand for REITs, REIT shares, and lower share prices overall. So that's something to keep in mind. Also, there's tenant credit risk. We've mentioned this is how you make your money is off of your tenants. Mm-hmm. REITs depend on that money from tenants to generate cash flow and pay those dividends to the shareholders. The financial health and creditworthiness of tenants can impact REIT's ability to collect rent and maintain occupancy levels. Tenant bankruptcies or defaults on lease agreements can lead to higher vacancy rates and lower rental income for that REIT.
Yeah.
So
when you apply for an application for an apartment, they require three pay stubs.
Yeah.
Some do
check your credit.
They will check to make sure that you are providing the proper information as far as what you actually make, because some people love to say they make more.
Sure. They want you to be able to pay.
Exactly. It doesn't do them any good if they move you in, take the time to clean out the apartment, clean the floors, do all this stuff, and then 2 months down the line, you can't pay your rent.
Exactly. Also, regulatory and legislative changes. We mentioned some of those that had happened in the past, but they are subject to those regulatory requirements and tax rules that may change over time. We might have some great legislation that is yet to come in the future that, of course, we can't foresee at the moment. And that can affect those real estate investments and zoning laws, even. If you think about zoning laws, those can impact operations and profitability of REITs. If all of a sudden there is a piece of the city that you can't have residential or commercial properties on, and you own one of those that's not available, or you were going to invest in one of those that you can't anymore, that obviously affects your investment.
It's not going to do you any good if you can't build anything.
Well, that's true. and that can affect the structure, distribution requirements, or tax treatments of REITs, potentially influencing investor returns. And also there's sector-specific risks. So different types of REITs, those offices, apartments, healthcare facilities may face unique risks related to their relative sectors, depending on what's going on in that sector. You know, that could affect the REIT.
Yeah, think about retail. I mean, do malls exist anymore?
I mean, they do, but they don't seem to be doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get everything on Amazon next day, why go to the store?
Right.
So, yeah, I can definitely see how those sector-specific risks can really harm somebody who might be investing in that kind of space.
Totally.
And that goes into how to invest in REITs. So let's just dive into that really fast. So there's the direct purchase of REIT shares we talked about. So most common method is to purchase shares, publicly traded REITs, through a brokerage account. So many REITs are listed on the major stock exchange. We've said this many times. So you can just go on there. They're listed a little bit different. So I would suggest going through a brokerage firm and say, what are these? And that way you can invest properly. Investors can buy and sell REIT shares like they would any other publicly traded stock. And the process is similar to investing in individual companies. We do have those exchange traded funds, those ETFs. So ETFs that specialize in REITs offer another way to invest in real estate. And REIT ETFs hold portfolios of REIT stocks and trade on stock exchanges throughout the trading day. Investing in a REIT ETF provides diversification across multiple REITs with a single investment vehicle. It's really cool.
Yeah.
There are those mutual funds. Some mutual funds focus on investing in those REITs and real estate related securities, as we've talked about, and they take all the funds, pull them into a diversified portfolio of REITs and real estate. So you might be a collective part of a group that owns several things.
Sure.
Mutual funds are offer professional management and can provide exposure to a broader range of real estate investments compared to investing in an individual REIT. Again, you're giving a chunk of money, it's going into a pool, and then they're dispersing it to multiple properties.
How they see fit.
Exactly. And then you get the rewards of that, which is really cool. And then we did talk about crowdfunding last week. So there's real estate crowdfunding platforms too. So some crowdfunding platforms allowed investors to invest in specific real estate projects or portfolios of properties managed by REITs. So these platforms typically offer opportunities for direct investments in real estate and with lower investment minimums, something that's very good for the American, the everyday guy who doesn't have a ton of money compared to traditional REIT investments.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. And if you didn't tune into that last podcast where we talked about crowdfunding, you can tune into that last one and learn a little bit more about Regulation CF and how that ties into that piece there, the real estate crowdfunding.
They all kind of mingle together.
Yeah, exactly. So to kind of wrap up our episode here, overall, REITs serve as a vehicle for investors to participate in the real estate market, diversify their portfolios, earn income, and potentially benefit from real estate market appreciation, all while enjoying the liquidity and professional management done by somebody else. And you actually are not responsible for owning, operating, and managing an entire apartment complex all by yourself.
I would never want to do that.
Yeah, that sounds like a hard job. So this is a good way to get involved without having to do all that.
Yep.
And in the 21st century, REITs have continued to evolve and grow as an asset class all of their own, and a very attractive one at that. They have become an integral part of diversified investment portfolios for individual investors, institutional investors, and pension funds seeking income diversification and potential capital appreciation through their real estate investments.
I think these are all awesome. But again, remember, if you want to explore these REITs,
yep,
please do your research. This is not advice.
Yeah.
Always look everything up.
Gain help from a professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. We are far from the professional. But other than that, I hope you've learned something. And again, thanks for tuning in to M2I Alternative Investment Chats. We hope to see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for more insights in our next episode. And don't forget to subscribe to continue the journey with M2I. See you next time.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as professional, financial, or investment advice. This podcast should not be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any securities. We strongly recommend that you seek advice from a qualified professional before making any financial decisions.